Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, pull the press.
Okay, the Media Project is underway for another week from Northeast Public Radio in Albany, New York. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ira Fussfeld of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York, back from hibernation in California. And with Rick Smith taking this week to travel someplace or other, I've slid into his chair. Well, you know, the Hearst people, despite the financial problems of newspapers, still have a healthy travel budget for Rick. So he's taking advantage of it.
Well, there's good reason for that, Ira, because, well, he's tall, he's handsome, he looks like an editor, so he's their guy.
Was it last week that you were not here the week before?
I was. Last week.
And Rosemary pointed out that this was going to be a week where you aren't going to be talking about height
or weight and handsome. Yeah.
So you've wasted no time luring us back in.
She also took a very large shot at me at the end of the show.
Oh, God, you listened to it.
I did.
Oh,
I listened to it from Memphis, where we went to Graceland. And I was listening to the Media Project and listening to Rosemary say at the very end, at least I could talk this week because Alan...
You see my point.
Yes, I believe I've used that line sometimes when you're not here and Rosemary is not. Let me ask you a question. Did you listen to the program live in Memphis?
I don't know. I don't remember. But I listened to the whole thing.
I actually, in California, and bearing in mind the time difference, I had a couple of mornings at 6 a.m. where I was listening to live programming here on the WAMC app.
Which is so easy to get. Most people don't know it. You go to the App Store or you go to WMC.org, you download the thing, and you can listen to this radio station anywhere in the world, and I have. Amazing.
I have friends who listen to this in Bucharest.
Yeah.
Romania.
So
beautiful.
Really cool.
I listen in Colombia, South America. Yeah. Beautiful.
Well, for the uninitiated, Alan Shartok is here. He is the CEO of Northeast Public Radio and a columnist and a commentator, and he does pretty much everything except the windows. And Rosemary, you've done those too. And Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and professor of journalism at the Albany State University of New York, which is not what they want. Yeah, they don't like that. What do we call it?
UAlbany.
See, I don't like that. When the State University started changing names and they wanted, for example, Ulster County Community College to be known as SUNY Ulster.
Although other than UCC.
Yeah, and that was the point. We always used to use in headlines UCCC, and that's what everybody knew the college as. And the college president, who I know pretty well, the former college president, he wanted me to run it the other way. And I said, no, everybody knows it as UCC, and I'm not going to say SUNY Ulster.
That's funny. Overseas, I always say SUNY Albany, because if you say UAlbany, they go, oh, you're from Albania.
Or they say
UAlbany, I New York.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the team, and I've got lots of important Trump news, but let's start elsewhere for something more serious. I know Rosemary has got a story she's eager to talk about.
Oh, it just came down, and it is a scary story. It's out of Turkey, which has experienced just a horrible amount of suicide bombing and other terrorist attacks. Of course, it's right next to Syria, so that's engendered a lot of this. And the response there has been draconian by the government, and I think it's a warning lesson for us. The government there wants to fight terrorism, of course, but considers unarmed terrorists to be authors, journalists, non-governmental agencies, anybody who criticizes the government. And they want to fight and shut down. They want to shut down free speech as a way to fight terrorism. And I can see that happening here when there's a natural willingness. Alan, you speak about this all the time, to give up some of your civil rights in order to feel more protected. And here you see the length that it can be carried out to. Turkey is also trying to shut down and shut up a German comedian who does his show in Germany, not in Turkey, but in Germany, and makes fun of him and of some of the things that Turkey has done. He wants them, he wants the German officials to prosecute this guy as a for making bad comments about another head of state, which is some obscure law in Germany. But the point is, they're really pressing to shut down any dissent, any criticism of government.
And Turkey is one of our friends.
As is Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Let me go one step further with you and ask you this, Rosemary. You made a fleeting reference to what might happen in this country. You think there are any of the candidates who are running for office right now who show any propensity to do this kind of thing?
Oh, I think Mr. Trump has done more than show a propensity. He said right out loud that he wants to strengthen, or I guess throw out libel.
He wants to make it easier to win libel cases.
Yeah, so you can shut up the press.
But this week, as we speak, he had a secret meeting with none other than Megan Fox.
Megan Kelly.
Oh,
Megan
Fox
was
my natural mistake.
I was going to say our long national nightmare has ended because there seems to have been a rapprochement between the two of them. And just for the folks who don't know, the big feud between Megan Kelly of Fox News and Donald Trump. And she, in my view, surprisingly, went to see him.
She set up the meeting.
Yeah. What do you think about that part? So the end of the story, at least as we speak, is they now seem to have made peace, although he has not yet agreed to go on her program to be interviewed.
He has said, oh, it was very, very nice. This was
there was no blood coming out of any of her orifices.
Out of wherever, yeah. And he's sort of smug about it, too. Like, she came to me, that was,
well, that's
that
what's
was
a key,
made known.
Yeah, and what that surprised me. I must say I would not have done that if I were in her shoes.
Well, you're not in her shoes.
Yes, well,
I've never seen you in high heels.
No, I'm not. I don't look good in heels.
However,
no transgender joke.
No, not at all. And none were intended,
no.
Rosemary.
No,
well, that's
no.
from a different program, so let's not get
okay,
letters to this.
So let's parse this for a moment. Fox and Mr. Ailes and all
Roger Ailes.
Roger Ailes. He has a couple of nicknames, but I'm not using them right now because I would hear from, you know, people about that. So I don't want to do that. But they decided, look, this guy could well be carrying all the mail in the Republican Party. We're a Republican, to use an Ira word, orifice. And so we have to have that relationship. Both of them were making out like crazy as a result of this. He made out.
You may want to use another metaphor.
No, this is not making out sexually. This is making out in life.
Financially.
Yeah.
And reputation.
Yeah. She's seen as this woman who stands up to power, and people love that. And he is seen as, somebody who is willing to take on the press and his people for all of those reasons. And his people love him for that. So now there is this sort of coming together. I don't think it's in his interest to let this happen. In other words,
to let the rapprochement happen.
I don't.
That's interesting.
I think they've tried this kind of thing before, and it really hasn't worked out. But there's another thing I just want to mention here. Megyn Kelly is a beautiful woman. And as a result of that, you now have Donald Trump, the TV star. I mean, let's face it. That's one of the reasons he's done so well. And he's picking on, and he was picking on, Megyn Kelly, who asked perfectly good and relevant questions to him, which ticked them off beyond belief. And the fact that she's beautiful plays into the American psyche of how, you know, these things become so rapidly disseminated.
I have to agree. And if we get letters saying how vapid that is or surface, no, they're movie stars. They look like
here's my point. We the three of us in our careers no doubt have had times where prominent people have decided they didn't want to talk to us.
Right.
And we then have to decide how we want to handle it.
Right.
And depending on the circumstance, and I think this is one of those circumstances, Megyn Kelly has a platform that Trump needs. He needs to get to these Fox people. And for her—
Why? Why does he need them? He hasn't shown that he needs—
Because that's his base.
Well, his base is for him no matter what. You know what? Fox is getting a taste of its own medicine because here, I think Fox is regarded as part of being the man, the establishment, and I think it's working for him.
I think it's mutual, though, especially if he's going into a conference fight. He wants that platform, as you said, Ira, of Fox. He may not have needed it now. He's surprised himself how he's reached directly to people. But Fox would be useful to him. So I don't.
It would be useful, Rosemary. Just let me ask you this: it would be useful to him, but he doesn't know if he can depend on them. After all, they're part of the establishment
now. But he's a dealer, Alan, so he's in there now. Fox comes crawling to him in his view, and he's painting it
and
that
that's
way.
That's the key
what
word.
Now is he going to ask of them? He goes, yeah, I'll do an interview, but, and he's going to put conditions on it. We don't know what those conditions
Which is
are.
Why, if I'm Megyn Kelly, I don't go to him. I wait for him to come to me, because I believe that he needs her more than she needs him.
Well, I don't agree with you. I think this guy has done without them, you know, up to now beautifully. Look, you take a look at the Bernie Sanders phenomenon. There's a list in one of the tabs this morning of everybody who's endorsed Hillary. It's huge. The New York Times, the Daily News, this, that. Every organized group, all the politicians. And then they say Bernie beneath it. And they have about five people who have endorsed, five institutions that have endorsed Bernie. One unit of the transport workers, I believe,
right.
group. And yet, Bernie has come from way, way, way back. This morning, as we speak, which is a Thursday morning before the primary next Tuesday, we are hearing that he's within 10 points now. The Mo is with him. And if the kids come out, he could upset the apple cart and all the pollsters.
But that's political. Let's talk to me. One more piece on this media thing. I think that Trump needed her because of his standing with women. And that
yep.
by her going to him, he would be crazy not to accept her entree. But the entree should have been the other way around, so that she, had she held her ground, I believe, he eventually would
have. Should have, schmood have.
And but he also has new advisors who I think are helping him.
Well, they're saying, let's act more presidential,
yeah.
and we do end. This is a babyish feud. It
yeah.
hurts your image with women. Make a good deal to be on her TV show, and you get
yeah.
everything.
Now, you have another Trump story. There was no end of Trump media stories. Trump is endorsed for the New York primary on the Republican side by the New York Observer newspaper.
Now, I wonder why.
This is a great story.
Yeah. And so the New York Observer's publisher is his daughter's husband, Jared.
And we all know him personally now because they were all on TV, on CNN, on those really incredibly stupid family town halls.
Oh, yes. Well, we could get to that.
Gosh.
I don't know what that was all about other than another shot at getting ratings for the
network. Well,
and
Cruz
network.
Was on with his
yeah.
wife last night. Same. Oh, my God, the softball questions,
yeah.
the pandering. It's like free commercials.
Yeah.
So, every time I think of Cruz, talk about the press, I think of the way Trump has successfully branded Cruz as Lying Ted. I saw another candidate the other day who
yes.
I don't think is a Trumpet saying Lying Ted.
No, there's a political commercial on in the New York City market for a down ballot election. And the candidate whose ad it was is describing his opponent as, I believe it's Lying Something, Kaminsky, Lying Todd or whatever.
So, Kaminsky's running out there on
Long Island.
Long Island. And that's another failure of the
is
press.
Is that the Skilos?
Yes, so Skilos is indicted. He's convicted. They send him to jail. He has to get out of the Senate.
Yeah.
This is a chance for the Democrats to take up so they get this very exciting young prosecutor. Kaminsky to run for the seat, who happens to be, and this is the most important part of this at all, the grandnephew of none other than a 2,000-year-old man, Mel Brooks.
And
Mel Brooks puts out a robocall for him. And Mel Brooks is perhaps his most exciting line as the 2,000-year-old man was, that he has all these children in these 2,000 years and not a postcard that says, "How are you, Pop?" And so,
well, back to the New York Observer newspaper,
yeah.
Published by Trump's son-in-law, and you mentioned the one issue. The other one, if you may recall, some mm-hmm. weeks ago, when the son-in-law and the editor mm-hmm. helped Trump write his speech before the
sure.
Jewish.
Right.
Well,
first,
now
the first written prepared speech.
Right.
Was that AIPAC?
AIPAC. Yes. So now you have the Observer officially endorsing Trump, and the word came down this week that the Observer's national political reporter Ross Barkin is leaving the paper as a result of those things. I mean, isn't that just a matter of time before people of integrity will do that?
Well,
he left in a very mild manner, though. He said, you know, this is just too close for comfort, a relationship too close. But I have respect, and he listed everybody has respect for, including the son-in-law, who
yeah.
is using his position boldly to bolster his
Well, that brings
a
question. I mean, let's put mm-hmm. ourselves in the position of the son-in-law. He marries the daughter, and he publishes a newspaper. And what other way does he have to go?
Stay out.
You just stay.
Oh, he wasn't going to do
I'm
that.
So close, I can't do this at all.
He wasn't going to do
well,
that.
Well, Alan often talks about what you pay for. Alan often talks about how coverage on the editorial side could be dictated by the top, even when the top is not directly dictating.
That's a good point.
So the fact that Trump's son-in-law runs the paper has to have some impact on the reporters, based on your theory, not mine.
Two things I want to point out here. Number one, as you said, that this guy is, you know, mild-mannered. Which, of course,
the reporter,
which, of course, makes him,
Clark Kent, sorry
to do this, a mild-mannered reporter.
That's right.
And we all know who that was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you see him, you look into his own, you know, being, and you say, okay, I have to make a decision about my future if I'm with this suspect organization. That puts the onus on me.
Right.
He goes out, he doesn't have a job, and he says, I'd like another job doing the same thing somewhere. I say, good luck, Charlie.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a hard time, in part because jobs at all in print media are hard to come by these days.
Yeah.
And then the final Trump story of the week is the word that the prosecutors in Florida are not going to pursue charges against Corey Lewandowski, Trump's campaign manager, who, as you recall, was charged with battery after allegedly pushing or grabbing the arm of a reporter for Breitbart News. You know, I don't know if you've talked about this, any of this on the air.
Well, we have.
When you watched the video, what was your reaction?
Roundtable, we've done. We thought that, yes, there were grounds here, and the police agreed with it. I'm floored by this. Where on TV or in real life have you ever seen a case where the police want to bring a charge and the prosecutors let them when they don't think it's a case? Why are we hearing now that they're not going to bring the charge?
Right.
It's very odd.
Well, there are many. I'm sorry, Rosemary. I know what a fierce, and I respect so much of you. What a fierce defender of all things the press you are. But you can imagine if, you know, these guys have got to be protected, these candidates. And if it was a guy and he put his hand on the guy's arm, it would not have been the same
thing. He didn't just put his hand on her arm. That's not the case, Alan. He bruised her. He grabbed it and squeezed it. And it was a big man against a small woman. I'm sorry. That is a difference.
I hear your voice.
And I lied. There is one other Trump story.
Oh, my gosh.
Trump other related.
It's an old Trump show.
Yeah,
and this is a thousand Trump stories. Yeah, and this is, by the way, the Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Alan Shartok and Rosemary Arameo. I know this happened a week or so ago, but it has not yet been discussed on this program. And that's the Boston Globe's phony opinion page a week ago Sunday, in which they showed a front page of the Globe that purported to show all of the stories that would occur if Trump became president.
The day Trump takes office, all of these. So give us some examples.
Right. So their lead headline was deportations to begin, and U.S. soldiers refuse order to kill ISIS, and things of that sort.
So the question is, was that right or was it?
Yeah, what do we think? I was offended by it to a large degree, and I've decided it's because I'm an old fogey.
That's right. You are an old fogey.
Yeah, so what do you young fogeys think?
Well, Alan and
my
I disagree.
75-year-old,
okay.
My 75-year-old.
I have a feeling I'm going to agree with Rosemary.
You will.
You guys always do, because you come from the old days.
Yeah, well, that could be.
I don't think there should be anything fiction in a newspaper. I don't even like so-and-so will call her, where you make up a name. No, you can say this person can't be named, and here's why.
Yeah.
But to put a fake name and to put a whole fake page, it's like all those April Fool's Day.
I hate April Fool's Day.
Do. Yeah.
Well,
they always get into trouble. And we can discuss the niceties. Oh, there was a little note in the bottom, and it was really the editorial, blah, blah, blah. It was fake stuff.
Okay, you make a point. I'd like to tell a story. The New York Times.
You made a point. He's going to tell a story.
Now he's going to really talk.
The New York Times publishes years ago, when Mario Cuomo, I was doing a weekly show with him, is the governor. They published an anonymous piece on the editorial page by somebody, I've never seen it since, named Jericho. And Jericho is making the point that Mario is talking to Matilda and saying, we're going to vote for the Republican because the next time it's our turn. That's the point of this stupid thing, meaning I thought somebody must be related to one of the editors somehow, because it was so dumb. And at the bottom, it has a little identifying note that says, Jericho is really an academic who watches the Albany Scene. I immediately hear from the Cuomo camp, you did something bad to us. They used an expletive, but I don't think I want to use that on the air, maintaining the license. And they really reached out to find out who it was. So once you start doing this stuff, you can get yourself into a lot of trouble.
You know, I do agree with Alan to the extent that I worked for newspapers before I got out of the dying business who were handling the end of their business with such great care. It was so bland, the content was so, they didn't want to offend anybody because you might lose a customer or two. So I sort of
Ira knows about that.
That the Boston Globe is doing these bold things. First, they had a front page editorial saying, Elizabeth Warren, please run.
Yeah.
And now this front page, which is indeed inventive enough, it could have been in The Onion.
The Daily News.
So I applaud the effort.
The Daily News is doing it every day.
They are.
Every single day.
The Daily News has really taken over from the Post with their front pages being more interesting. Well,
they're more interesting, and they happen to be more to my liking, so therefore I'm not as oppositional.
But I agree with Rosemary's original point was I don't like real newspapers phonying up content. Now, that said, they did it on the editorial page. They in effect, wrote an editorial in a different and unique way. They attracted a lot of attention for it. They gave people a heads up a couple of days in advance that something interesting was coming. But it got their attention. It got people's attention, and I suppose that's a good thing.
But it's just one step away from running a Mike Barnicle column in which all of the sources are made up and the quotes are phony. It's just a little tiny step away.
Yeah. Barnicle has seemed to have survived and probably making a lot more money than ever by being on MSNBC.
Morning Joe?
Usually, he does not deserve it.
He's still at the bottom of the boat.
And do you know
Don't
that
you get it, Barnicle?
And do you know that Mike Barnicle was in the movie The Candidate?
Yes.
In the movie The Candidate?
A young
Robert
Mark
Redford?
Barnicle, in the very early scenes, he was one of his cadre of young up-and-coming people.
That was a great movie, and I recommend it to everybody. Absolutely. Because
I want to rewatch it in this 2016
season. Oh, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And now, speaking of watching, or people who didn't watch, the end has come for Al Jazeera America, news
what a
channel.
Shame.
Yeah, that's my feeling. What do you think about that? Why didn't that channel succeed?
It didn't succeed because there's a tremendous prejudice in this country against Arabs. End of discussion.
Well, that is true. It also was horribly mismanaged. They had a lot of money to begin with, and money is great, but it's no substitute for being managed well, making sure you have leaders who can really direct a newsroom, who could have responded perhaps to the lack of response in America.
You know what, Rosemary? Nobody believes for a single second that the Arab leadership in Qatar was not calling the shots on this.
And any more than Roger Ailes is calling the shots for Fox.
Well, I think it gets to the basis of what I just said. You know, there is a tremendous anti-Arab prejudice in this country, and therefore they treat this leadership with great suspicion.
Well, it's a shame that people didn't give that channel a chance because they did excellent journalism. They had a lot of well-known American
excellent talent. I know many people who worked for Al Jazeera.
I interviewed the head guy, the head lady, I believe it was, back in the day. Yeah, and they assured me that it was going to be free and clear and that it was not going to take any. I said, well, what if the head guy from Qatar calls you and wants a story in here? And there was a little bit of opposition.
Well, the
thing is, though, it did many. So even if you, for a minute, grant that it was completely pro-Arab, which it wasn't, but say that were true, it still presented stories from around the world that are not available anyplace else.
That's why you
and
have
it was
to be
valuable for that.
That's why you have the BBC, don't you know?
That's true.
Well, yeah, but that's not knocking the socks off of the ratings either. BBC America.
No, on the other hand, it has its place. We play it on public radio.
Well, you're talking about radio. I'm talking about the TV side.
Yeah, no, there's TV side. Yeah. There's a thing. I mean, I always love to just tune in on the presenter. You know, she can be quite
good looking.
Well, America
has a long tradition of we only care about foreign news if it involves Americans.
Yeah,
right.
It's very insular.
And every morning, sure. You're right.
Globally involved. It's amazing.
Sure. Every morning I got to listen to what's going on in another country that I could care less about, which is good for me. I should be presented with that.
Absolutely.
The Guardian newspaper in England commissioned research to inspect 70 million comments left on its website since 2006. And it, quote, provides the first quantitative evidence for what female journalists have long suspected, that articles written by women attract more abuse and dismissive trolling than those written by men, regardless of what the article is about. Rosemary, you have a minute and 6 seconds. Go.
I don't need that long. I blog. I get unbelievably vitriolic email. I do on the program, too.
Sure.
I try to answer it, but they're just some crazy people out there. And it's so easy to do it in comments in response to an article or a blog. You're anonymous or you're just a name. It doesn't mean anything. There's no consequences. And there's a lot of ugly sexism. Ask Hillary Clinton. She gets it more than any of us.
Sure, you're right. And I want to say this, although I know that I'll get mail on this. You have no greater defender, Rosemary, than me.
Right. I know.
Which program do you do that on?
When somebody is really despicable, you'll always find me.
Then Alan is there. Yeah,
all right.
True.
Well, I'll take your word for it because we don't have any more time for us to discuss.
That's very big of you with the emphasis on the big.
Yes, thank you. And ending the program the way we began it. Very nice for you all to have joined us this week. I hope you will be back next week. For the Media Project, this is Ira Fussfeld with Alan Shartok and Rosemary Ormeo. Thanks for joining us on the Media Project.
How come I didn't have any chance to say anything?
Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.